to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I'm talking with illustrator and designer Tad Carpenter. Tad and his wife Jessica run Carpenter Collective, based out of Kansas City, and have worked with clients like Adobe, Target, and Conan O'Brien. We chat about growing up in Kansas while his dad was an illustrator for Hallmark, the reason why you should work for someone else and learn for them before you make the jump to go out on your own, how he ended up hosting Kodak's YouTube series Press On, and more, all right after this. Jack Prince is one of our favorite companies to work with. They offer great products at even better prices, with some of the best customer service I've ever seen. Why not pick Jack Prince next time you need t-shirts, business cards, stickers, or flyers printed? Right now, Jack Prince is offering 4-day turnaround on their most popular apparel products. That's 4 days with no rush fees, no hassle, and no BS. With apparel from popular brands like American Apparel, Next Level, Gildan, All Style, and more, starting as low as $3.99 each. Now is the time to take advantage of this great offer. Visit jack.inc/4days to order your apparel today. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South Podcast listeners 20% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. We've gone through and streamlined the Creative South Podcast Patreon page, cleaning out the excess and making it easier for you to support us. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. Every dollar helps cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South Podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast and become a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Tad, thanks for joining me tonight.
Oh my gosh, I'm so honored that you reached out and invited me onto your podcast. I appreciate you having me here.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. When were you at Creative South? You were at Creative South 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Oh yeah, that sounds about right. 2 or 3 years ago, I can't remember which one it was, but 2 or 3. Still waiting for Mike to invite me back, for God's sakes. I don't know, but
I will have a talk with him.
Yeah,
I will make sure that he hears this and does so. So I like to kind of start everything off with, you know, where'd you grow up?
Absolutely. I am a Midwest boy. I like to joke that I was born, bred, and will be buried in the Midwest, specifically Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I'm based out of Kansas City, Missouri, and I was born right around here as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So you said you're from the Midwest. Where are you from?
Yeah. So I grew up. I'm originally from Chicago area.
Okay.
And then when I was about 4, we moved up to Minnesota, right outside the Twin Cities, and lived there until I was in 8th grade.
Both great places. Yeah. I thought I could feel some Midwestern ness, you know, oozing off of you. I thought I could sense that.
Yeah, I will say I have been in the South for about 30 years now, so close to it. I think next year will be 30 years that I've been below the Mason-Dixon line.
You moved down there when you were in 8th grade with your family?
Yeah, with my – no, I went out on my own. I started working in 8th grade.
Entrepreneur, 12-year-old?
Yeah, I was working in the coal mines. no, my family moved to Orlando. So I grew up in the Midwest, but I'm a damn Yankee. I moved to the South, and I stayed. So
yeah.
That's the definition of a damn Yankee.
There you go, right? Yeah, well, I love the Midwest. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky in our – practice that I get to travel quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's either going to see clients and dealing with projects, or if that's doing speaking engagements or visiting universities or whatever. I love to travel, and there's so many amazing places.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, there's something about Kansas City. It's something about the Midwest that just I can't escape. And it just, I mean, more than anything, it feels like home. I think that's why everybody kind of plans roots where they plant them, is because it feels like home. And Kansas City will always feel that way for me. And as a creative person, God, I love Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And it's an unassuming town, I would say. A lot of people probably are like, oh, I know Kansas City. I think I've flown over there on my way to Denver or on my way to San Francisco or mm-hmm. something. Kansas City as a creative market is it's unbelievable. It is an amazing creative city, specifically in design and visual communication. But for all forms of the art, it is amazing, and it blows people away when they come here. They come here very unassuming. They come here not with great expectations and are constantly blown away. So I think we do a good job at that, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that Hallmark greeting cards is world headquartered here, which kind of takes me back to why I live here. Hallmark greeting cards has been here for over 105 years or 110 years or whatever it is. And my father started working there in 1973, and he was an artist for Hallmark greeting cards and just retired last December 23rd after 41 and a half years with the gold crown. So I've never been an employee of Hallmark's. I've actually done work with Hallmark since I think I was 17 the first time. Wow. I did. I don't even think I was legally supposed to do work for them at that time. No one else will hear this. So that's why I kind of was here in Kansas City. My father was working for Hallmark as an illustrator, as an art director, designer, and really started to introduce me to visual communication and design and illustration. And I kind of started to fall in love with it with my dad.
Sure. So you came by it naturally. I'm assuming, you know, as a kid, you were pretty artsy too, especially having that kind of influence growing up.
Absolutely. I joke that I would probably be homeless if I didn't do some sort of design or not to mention, I'd probably be thrown out of my family. Both my parents are really creative. I married a designer. Mm-hmm. It's something that as a family we all share. And I love that. Like that is very much a common bond, with our families. We all get to around and talk about what we're all working on or what we're all passionate about at the moment, what we're excited about at the moment. And a lot of times that's what we're working on. My mom does fibers, and different types of, rugs and she does something called hooked rugs and penny rugs and dyes her own wool and does all this stuff. So that's really cool to see. And then my dad obviously is a really accomplished illustrator. Mm-hmm. And then my wife and I do what we do. So it's fun to kind of share that. And growing up, I knew I wanted to do design. Mm-hmm. I should say I knew I wanted to do art, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't think I quite start to put the pieces together as a kid, except I was drawing, you know, flyers for my buddy's bands and T-shirts and shit like that. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is design. I thought I was just like drawing cool shit, you know? Very quickly I started to understand what it was. And to be honest, having my dad as my mentor and teacher my whole life, a huge advantage and something I loved. But at the same time, it was also one of those things that it kind of created a lot of doubt for myself, to be quite frank and quite honest.
Was it one of those you were just worried about living up to his standard or living in his shadow?
All of the above. The first thing was, like, my dad, I can't express how unbelievably talented this dude is, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he's that type of person that could literally sit down and draw anything.
Sure.
Whether that's hand lettering, whether that's a comic strip, which he had a nationally syndicated comic strip for quite a while, whether that's really uber realistic. He does beautiful oil paintings and pastel work. And, like, the dude is natural. I've never met anybody that can draw like him. Like, just unbelievable. So growing up and drawing together, I always remember being like, why can I not draw like him? And
sure.
If I can draw like him, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, or maybe this isn't what I should be doing, right?
Right.
But very quick, I mean, he was always very supportive and would stay up all the time late at night working with me and helping me and coaching me. So it's 100% nothing he did, but it's one of those things, like all of us artists, you can't help but compare yourself to others, right?
Be a little insecure and sensitive.
And sensitive, as we all deep down are. And then when you're living under the roof with somebody that's that talented, you're like, shit, man, maybe I need to go to trade school, or I don't know, this ain't gonna work. But luckily you end up figuring out that there's a million ways to make a mark. And you start to find kind of what your own voice is and kind of how you want to start to tell stories. And that's what's amazing. That's what's fantastic about our industry, is there's a place for everybody.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear about the finding your mark and growing up. And because I've got twin boys, and one of my sons I mean, both of them like to draw, but one of them is just obsessed with drawing.
Yeah.
And he always wants me to draw with him, which he's 8, so that generally ends up with him wanting me to draw for him. But, you know, he sees me drawing and he kind of clams up and I'm like, buddy, you can do this. And, you know, I'm trying to be as encouraging as possible. And I can see in him that he's like, well, Dad can do it better than me. And I'm trying to say, well, because Dad's got a lot more experience.
100%. But, yeah.
You know, I know when I was his age, he draws remarkably better than I did when I was 8.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And it's just one of those things that, and I know I talked about it when I was at Creative South, was one of my dad's best friends was a gentleman named Gordon McKenzie. Mm-hmm. And Gordon, he was an amazing artist and designer at Hallmark, but he would go on to eventually become this like creative guru and go and speak about the power of play and how important creativity is. And you're talking, you know, this is 25, 30 years ago, you know, probably 25 years ago.
Sure.
Before kind of that became kind of a, you know, kind of a buzzword. But Gordon would always go around and talk to schools about how important it is to be creative and draw, and how as we get older, we just stop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a firm believer that I think, you know, not to let the cat out of the bag, but like, I kind of think anybody can do this, you know, mm-hmm. I really think that as we were younger or as we started to get older, obviously we find other interests, but I also think that people begin to compare themselves to others very quickly.
Sure.
And when they think they're not as good as someone else, it's a very easy time to abandon something, mm-hmm. right? So I think that happens a lot, like, you know, talking about your son or what I experienced with my dad. But I also knew that I loved to do it. Like, I thoroughly find enjoyment out of making something that wasn't in existence yesterday. You know,
sure.
That's a cool and powerful thing that I knew I would find my way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you just got to keep digging ditches, you know, you just keep digging ditches and eventually you find what feels right, I guess.
Gotcha. So, you know, after kind of getting back to what we were talking about, you know, the path, when you, after you're growing up, you know, you go off to college. Did you focus on design when you got to college, or did you, cause I know you have a BFA in graphic design. Were you focused on design and illustration, or were you focused on, you know, other stuff, kind of trying to find your way of what,
absolutely,
what was going to fit right for you?
I mean, I don't think I had a storybook college experience like a lot of people.
Sure.
I don't want to say I was lost going into college, but I didn't quite know exactly how or where I wanted to go.
I understand that feeling well.
You know that, yeah. And I have a feeling there's a lot of people out there that are that way. I always meet somebody and they're like, "Oh, I went right to MICA, or I went right to Art Center," and I was, you know, I was like, "Man, that's amazing." I started where going to an art school,
mm-hmm.
didn't the right fit entirely. So I then went to a junior college.
Sure.
And just was like, I'm just gonna figure this out. At least I'm knocking credits out and figuring this out, you know. I was unbelievably thankful that they had a really unbelievably fantastic art program.
Mm-hmm.
And more on the fine arts side. And I think I went through this phase probably like 17 to 19 to 20 where I was all in on fine art. Like, I really thoroughly enjoy creating fine art.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's even the proper term anymore, but you know,
yeah.
I still do. I still, part of me thinks that's where later on I might continue to kind of push, but I love doing that. And I love doing that. And I had this instructor from Germany named Zig Friedis. And he was an amazing drawing teacher,
mm-hmm.
and would really push you to try new things. He used to be a screen printer for like Andy Warhol and all those guys back in New York. He would run a screen printing shop that would print all of their work. Dude had stories for days, and it was just a really cool, really positive and empowering experience to meet with this guy that was scary as all get out. And then you got on his good graces and he really encouraged you. So I started at junior college just kind of like, well, I like fine art. I like drawing. Where am I going to go with this? And then I ended up going to the University of Kansas,
mm-hmm.
and I started to kind of dabble with graphic design.
Okay.
And that combination of graphic design and my previous experience with doing fine art and just traditional art,
sure.
is what also made me start to recognize illustration.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I was at KU, I was there for 3 years. Yeah, I was at University of Kansas for 3 years where I graduated. I was, at this time, you were able to do both programs. So
okay.
since all of my electives ever as a graphic designer were my illustration courses, and all my electives for illustration were my graphic design courses. So I was actually able to go out of there with a degree in each.
Okay.
And kind of study both, because at the end of the day, I love both equally. Mm-hmm. And personally, I love now where I see our industry at now, where I personally don't think there's a difference between being a graphic designer and an illustrator.
No.
I think we're all kind of creating visual language and working together. And I hope to see more universities just dissolve that fucking line that's drawn between graphic design and illustration, and just start blending a lot of us together to start speaking the same language a little better, because that's where we're all heading.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially since I think illustration for a while was a holdout in the digital world. Like it took longer to catch on with stuff. And, but now, I mean, I don't know anybody that doesn't use digital as their medium for final proofs.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, everybody's bringing it into the system eventually anyway, you know? Yeah. So that's obviously a huge component for what something everyone needs to know. But even more so, what I think is valuable is that, I can't imagine being purely just an illustrator without sure. any knowledge of typography, you know?
No. Yeah.
And I know when I teach, and I've taught both graphic design and illustration, typically more on the graphic design side of things. But even when I've taught an illustration class, I'm like, we're going to spend way more time on type than any of you guys would want to. And I think in the long run, it's going to be extremely valuable to you. You know, there's nothing worse than when you see some beautiful illustration and then the type is just freaking dumped right
like
on
it
top.
It looks like it's forced in or, yeah, exactly.
Right. So it's like, let's talk about that. And there's a million ways to make it successful within the confines of what you're trying to do, right? So let's get some basic understanding of typography and even lettering. And I think that's why I remember when I was in school going through program, even some of the early classes, so many of them were graphic designers and illustrators, like kind of working together through a class or through kind of a mm-hmm. track. And then it might just split off a little bit here or there. And I'm like, I feel like that is what we need to, from it, not to get on a soapbox about our design education system, but sure. like, I feel like that is really, something that I would stand behind, is like really starting to kind of blend those two a little bit. Yeah, maybe you kind of split off one way or the other for kind of an actual, you know, general practice. But mm-hmm. like, gosh, we all need to be kind of studying together a little bit more.
Yeah, I know when I was in college, and I think part of it was the college that I went to, which is a lot better about it now. But when I got there, it was, I mean, this was, you know, Zip Drive and Jazz Drive days.
Oh, yeah.
And the focus wasn't on the art side of it. It was on, let's learn the programs, because the programs were still relatively new. I mean, I think I started with like Illustrator 5 or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you could only do like 5 layers in Photoshop at the time. And, you know, there wasn't massive undos, and the history erased itself after a certain point.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They were so focused on the programs that I feel like I missed out a lot on the actual design education of things. And I wish I had more of that. And I wish I had been pushed more to like have actually mandatory classes that I needed to take in illustration. Cause yeah, I mean, I've had to teach myself all of that, and I'm, you know, I know where my strengths and weaknesses are, and I'm never going to be like a full out illustrator where I'm doing tons of editorial work and things like that. But, you know, finding that path, I think, you know, when you're given the options and sometimes maybe pushed to take those options.
You're absolutely right.
That I think that would be that would have been very helpful for
me. Well, I mean, I think about graphic designers, and it's I can't imagine any graphic designer not needing to be able to draw at some point.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that it's like you always get the student who raises their hand and says, what one advice would you have for me as a student, you know, in graphic design? And it's like, I mean, it's like, gosh, just draw more, like yeah. straight up draw, like, you know. And if you don't like to draw, find how you do like to draw, because mm-hmm. Everyone does it differently, and everyone can do it differently, and everyone needs to be able to do it. My wife and I approach design very differently. We both can illustrate, you know. She has her way of drafting and drawing. I have my way of drafting and drawing. You just find that way that works sure. for you. successful for you. So, I think that's hugely important. But yeah, it's just interesting to see. And then now as someone who teaches, it's interesting just to see what students and how they respond to now. And it's almost the exact opposite of what you're saying. When I teach, I'm very much like, we're going to focus on concept, design principles. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to introduce you to as many of my design heroes as possible. So you have a little bit of design education. And then I get the students who are like, can you give us a tutorial on how the best proper way to create a clipping mask without a proper, you know, it's like some long, very, you know, technical question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy to help you, man. But like, this is not an Adobe Illustrator class. This is not Photoshop class. This is a design class. And we're going to, all the decisions and all the time is going to be spent making you a better designer. Just use this shit as a tool, man.
Yeah.
And,
Cause it, like you said, it's just a tool. Eventually Adobe may, I mean, you already seen it with like Sketch, you know, Adobe's not necessarily going to be the powerhouse and products are going to come and go. And you need to know how to do the fundamentals of stuff to be able to translate that.
So, do you use Sketch?
I don't, but I don't have a real need to use it.
Well,
so.
I've seen a ton of people talking about how they use it recently, like, you know, in the past 6 months or whatever. I've never used it. And I'm just like, oh, crap. I need to try this thing, you know?
I haven't. I've played with it, but I don't use it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't do web work. So, I mean, it's still primarily a web tool. So it's...
Right.
And that's not what I do. I mean...
Yep.
So, I mean, I might design one website a year. If that.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, so you were talking about the teaching. How did that come about for you? Because you don't have a master's, I'm assuming.
No,
you know,
I don't.
And a lot of colleges, even for like adjunct professors and now, are still requiring that, which I don't get.
Not at all. No, I agree. I was lucky. It's crazy to believe that I have now been teaching for over 8 years, which is kind of a kick in the gut for me that I'm, you know, just getting old. I went to the University of Kansas as a design student. That's where I graduated. Mm-hmm. And then I went out and worked for several years. And my former professor at the university reached out to me, just said, would you ever be interested in teaching a class or two? Mm-hmm. And I very quickly said, absolutely not. Like that is zero at all. I like to make things. I like to design. I like to spend my time designing. I don't want to do that crap at all, man. Yeah. Not at all. She kept asking me. And then finally one semester, I said, all right, let's talk. Like, what does this mean? Like, how, you know, would I actually do this? And I tried it, and damn it, I fell in love with it. I love it so damn much. Mm-hmm. So much that I guess I've been doing this for 8 years now at my alma mater. I don't know if I would do it if it wasn't my alma mater. Maybe I would. I've been asked by a couple other universities, but I care about our program. Our program's so good, and I'm honored to be a part of it and continue to teach. And I've kind of taught ever since then, and I absolutely love being able to meet with a group of young designers several times a week and talk about something that, you know, I truly, truly love. Mm-hmm. And that's graphic design and visual communication and drawing and art and pop culture and like all these things that what our industry is. And see them fall in love with the thing that you fall in love with, or you had fallen in love with already, is super awesome. I really love it.
Sure. So when you kind of backing up a minute, when you got out of college, what did you do? Where did you go? Did you start working for like an agency or in-house somewhere? What were you doing?
Yeah. So I graduated. So between me graduating and then me going out on my own and starting my thing. I worked for a boutique design studio for about 5 years.
Okay.
I while I was in college, I interned there for my junior and senior year.
Oh, okay.
Most of my senior year, I think I got my classes down to like 1 or 2 days, and I was working like almost every day at this firm, which is fantastic. And then it just naturally kind of transitioned into a job, and I worked there for, you know, about 5 years. And I realized it was time for me to kind of do my own thing.
Sure.
And so I did that, and I officially went out on my own in 2009.
Okay.
I'd been doing some work prior to that, and kind of setting some things up, if you will, you know, prior to that. And so, yeah, that was kind of my transition. I tell my students that all the time, because I always get a student that's, you know, has some hotshot mentality, and it's like, I'm going to go freelance, like right off the bat. I'm going to go out and just start. And man, that's a great, I'm so glad they're ambitious, but I'm like, please, if you do anything, go work for somebody for like years, even if it's only like 3 years, go work for someone, because you don't know a damn thing yet about like the ins and outs of the industry.
Yeah.
You're the best designer in the world, but all that goes into working with clients and managing the books and getting new work and just all of the crap you really don't want to deal with. Go out and work for somebody for at least 3 years,
sure,
3 to 5 ideally. And you're getting paid to learn this industry. And that's how I tried to approach it. Mm-hmm. Was, I knew I wanted to run my own shop.
Okay.
That was a goal for me one day. I didn't know when, but I knew that was a goal. I want to work for a studio that is, smaller. Mm-hmm. I like smaller because you do everything. You are forced to do everything,
mm-hmm,
from create and design to pitch to take out the trash every night, you know? So I like that mentality. So I was thankful to learn some of that. And then go out on my own in 2009. And I felt prepared, to do that at that point for sure.
Gotcha. So you stepped out on your own about the same time that you started teaching too.
Literally the exact same year, big year. Not only that, 2009, first year teaching, first year out on my own. And I got married that year.
Wow. That banana was a big year for you.
It was a bananas years for little Tad here. Yeah. So yeah, it was a big year. I'll never forget. My wife and I were engaged. I was going out on my own. I was getting ready to start teaching. It was like a couple months before. Oh, my wife would be so mad that I'm telling this story. A couple months before my wedding. And my wife laughs when she tells me this story. She told me this year later that her father kind of like one evening kind of leaned into her and said, "Are you okay with this wedding?" And Jessica was like, "Of course I am. I love Tad. Like, I'm so excited to spend my life with him." And she said, my father-in-law at the time said, "Well, you know, he is unemployed, right? You know?" He was so concerned. My wife was like, "Dad, he's not unemployed. He's starting his own business. And trust me, he is going to be fine. He has plenty of work. He wasn't in our industry, didn't understand it, was terrified for his little girl." Don't blame him. I showed up at the door, I'd be terrified for my little girl. So it was just, I love that story and that anecdote of like this fearful father-in-law that was a little scared of me going out on my own.
I understand that. My wife freelances full time. I do it kind of part time, and I work in house for an engineering firm. But my mom has the opinion that since Tina works from home, that she just plays around at it.
Uh-huh.
It's just a hobby.
No. She's got deadlines. Yeah,
there's deadlines. There's clients. There's
she's writing proposals and estimates and doing the whole. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's more than just a full-time job.
It's way more than a full-time job. Anybody that owns their own business is truly a little cuckoo. Like you've got to be, you got to be ready for it. And you're just a little off your rocker if you're like, yeah, I'm going to run my own business, which essentially means I'm never going to have a day off.
Yep.
If I take vacation, work's probably coming with me. But I wouldn't change it. I would never change it in a million years. I love that mentality and that opportunity. But you do. It's a different mentality for sure. When you're self-employed or run your own shop for sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned with that, and then when you were working at the other agency, that you kind of knew that you wanted to do your own thing. Did you always have that kind of entrepreneurial spirit in you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I could remember. I mean, just like stupid little things, like I talked about when I was in, you know, junior college, or when I was in my first couple of, or even in high school for that. I can remember, like, I was super into painting, so I would do these huge paintings, and I can remember like going out and like pitching my work to galleries like all the time.
Sure.
Like trying to get these shows going, you know? And in retrospect, I think about those days as a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old doing this, and I'm like, what the fuck? What were you doing, dude? Like, you were walking into like gallery owners that were like, you know, adults, like grown adults, that, you know, and you were like walking in there and trying to sell them on what it was you're doing. And it worked a couple times. Like, I had a couple shows as like a kid, and I think about that all the time, and I'm like, that's kind of what I do now. Like, I mean, that's
takes
like
balls.
It takes balls, and more than balls, I'm stupid enough just to walk into that room and sit down and say, how the hell are you? Let's talk about what I'm doing, and let's see what you're doing. And you know, in the end of the day, that's kind of what a lot of design is sometimes, is you coming up with a concept and an idea, strategizing that idea, and then going into a room of people, a lot of times totally cold, and you trying to convince the hell out of them that this is the direction they need to head. And I don't know, I think about that all the time. You know, I think so often, I don't know if you feel this way, I think so often, like, the sales side of design is like considered icky and like gross.
I'm horrible at that. I feel gross every time I do it.
Every time, right? But the idea of it terrifies me. The idea of it is just, I'm like, oh, can't I just make what I make and then like move on to the next thing? But at the same time, there's something kind of exciting to me. Maybe it's the fear. Maybe I like being a little scared at times, you know? Mm-hmm. But there's something I kind of like about that side of things, you know?
Sure.
That just kind of, you know, gets you going, and you have to go in there and stand behind what you made. And kind of get everybody in that room on the same page as you. There's something very exciting about that, I think.
Yeah, that's I will agree with that part. I still am terrified by that process, and do much better over email and on the phone than in person. I'd break out into the cold sweat and
yeah, I'd rather email all day long than have to talk to a human being, right? So yeah absolutely. I hear you there, but.
So you go out on your own. When you go out on your own, are you and your wife partnering up immediately, or is she?
We did not. My wife was, my wife had a wonderful situation right out of school. She did the same thing. We went to the same program. Mm-hmm. She was a year behind me in school. We met literally the last semester before I was graduating.
Oh, wow.
And so we kind of started dating, and then she would she got an internship with Willoughby Design Group. Mm-hmm. And Willoughby Design Group, a lot of people probably recognize the name. Ann Willoughby, who's the owner over there, she's an AIGA gold medalist. Mm-hmm. She's she actually had Willoughby Design is actually the oldest woman ran design studio in all of the entire country.
Oh, wow.
Which is cool that it's here in Kansas City. And Anne's an amazing woman, and kind of cut from that. I mean, she's good friends with like Milton Glaser and like that era of design. And so Jessica, my wife, started working there as an intern, which then turned into a full-time gig. And so while I was going out on my own, my wife was a designer and eventually an art director at Willoughby Design. And I mean, I'd be lying if our goal and we didn't think that eventually we were going to partner up. We always knew that that was the goal and that was the plan. And I think we would have done it a lot earlier if my wife Jessica didn't have such an amazing gig, you know, working at Willoughby, which is an amazing design and branding firm. And I always tell students when they ask like, what should I do right out of school? And some of the best advice I ever heard was try, no matter what you do, to go work for one of your heroes, you know?
Yeah.
Who is one of your heroes? Whatever they'll pay you, whatever they'll give you, go work for them, because you're going to learn so much from a person like that. And I would consider Ann Willoughby very much that. A woman that started a design firm in the very, very early 1970s, mm-hmm. when she was having a hard time getting loans because she was a woman and getting, you know, I mean, like
all the lovely sexism that comes with that era.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, the stories she has about essentially growing up in like the Mad Men era in the design world, are fascinating, and to be able to grow and learn about design and just the other aspects of design, you know, mm-hmm. how you go into a meeting and how you handle that and how you present your work and all these things. My wife was learning so much. So in 09, when I went on my own, I wanted to kind of lay some groundwork and get things going. And we knew eventually that was going to happen.
Sure.
But we just needed to find the right time. And then it was, it's been 2 years ago now, finally, my wife stepped away from Willoughby, and it was a hard decision just because she loved it there so much. But frankly, I was just, I couldn't handle it anymore. It was too much. Like I was just, I was working all day, all night. And to be honest, my wife would get home at, 6 o'clock. And then I'd be like, all right, eat some dinner real quick. I need you on the other machine at about 8 o'clock and we need to bang out. So, so it was like, this is ridiculous. We need to do this. So, it's been about 2 years ago. And, to be honest, within the first 2 or 3 months of my wife finally coming on board, we got the largest project we'd ever received, either of us had ever worked on. And it pretty much locked us down for about a year, year and a half.
Oh, wow.
That's when we were talking previously off air, that kind of half joking that we haven't shared a lot of what we've been working on for 2 years, just because we've been so darn busy. And any free time we have, we're trying to build this new website, which we eventually will show it. And hopefully it'll be that project I was talking about and some other things. And now getting to work every day with my wife and having our studio start to evolve and grow a little bit. It's to be cheesy, it's totally a dream come true that I get to spend every day with my wife, who's my best friend. And I trust no one else on earth more with design and just life decisions. She's better at all of those things than I am.
You better say that.
It's the truth. Trust me. Yeah. It's been great.
Yeah. So you started 2009 and Carpenter Collective. Did you officially start calling it Carpenter Collective when Jessica kind of stepped out and joined, or were you calling it that before?
So when it was just me, and I'll tell you the strategy behind this and then how it was foiled. But like, anyway, when I was on my own, it was Tad Carpenter Creative.
Sure.
And with the whole idea of Jess was going to come on board, we just dropped the TAD and we're just Carpenter Creative at that point when Jess comes on board. Well, this woman owns carpentercreative.com out in California, and I have offered her many dollars to just freaking dump that on us, don't use it all that much anymore. And she's just not ready to part ways. We said, oh, that's fine. Not a big deal. So when my wife finally did come on board here 2 years ago, it just became Carpenter Collective. And that collective is my wife and I, but then we also employ we have 2 to 3 part-time designers and interns that work with us at all times.
Sure.
So, at our studio, we have them. I'm not going to lie. Being a teacher at the University of Kansas allows me to cherry pick the hell out of every class.
Every once in a while, I'll get some free labor.
We pay. I do not believe in that. But we get the best students. Like, that's what I love is literally, I have these kids in class and I'm like, she would be perfect, to work with us. And so, we typically have 2 to 3 of either my students or part-time designer that are working with us on things. Mm-hmm. We just recently moved into a new office, in February this year. That's been a big part of the year is building that out and kind of expanding on that. And the collective also kind of comes in because we do have 2 free desks, that we, have amazing people that are going to start working in our office also.
Okay.
Jess and I, our office is way bigger than we ever needed.
Sure.
And we love it. It's been so fantastic. But we just love having creative people around us. And, Kansas City has so many amazing people that are honestly just like our friends. Mm. And we love having them around as well.
Gotcha. With those 2 extra desks, are you kind of treating that like a little co-working space, sort of like micro co-working space almost?
Micro for sure. Yeah. So like, we have 6 or 7 stations set up, and typically 4 to 5 of those are for our team.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the other 2 that are these co-working spaces. One of our good friends, Alex Anderson, just moved in and he's using one of the spaces here, who's actually a former student and a former intern of mine many years ago. Now has finally gone out on his own and is working on his own doing the freelance thing. So he's working here. And then the other desk, the person moves in next week. I don't think I'm supposed to tell who it is, but, so it's amazing to be able to have, it's like kind of a little co-working space, but like very, I don't know what the right word, I don't want to say selective. That's not the right word. We want our friends here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We want people that like we, know and trust. And we're giving the keys to the whole place, So it's like we want people that we love to be around and we admire and we think do amazing work, and that are going to inspire all of us as well. And that's exactly the kind of people we like to work with.
Gotcha. So speaking of interesting people to work with, tell me how Press On came about with Kodak.
Man, that is a crazy. Yeah. I never in a million years thought I would be hosting a program.
Yeah.
You know, I'd never done work with Kodak.
Mm-hmm.
And, newsflash out there. I'm sure everyone is like, Kodak, are they still a business? Are they still around anymore? You know, right? Like, that's like everyone's first reaction when I tell them about it. It's like, I thought they, you know, left with, the fax machine or something, right?
No, so, they've well diversified. They're still around.
They are doing quite well, I am here to say. They were, they might have wished they had done what they had done a little sooner than mm-hmm. they had done, if that makes sense. But they were very smart in, they no longer operate with film really mm-hmm. at all anymore. I think sometimes they lease their, license their name out to different people that produce film,
sure.
put Kodak's name on it, but they really don't deal with film anymore. But what they found out was Kodak and the process that it requires to create film, like camera film,
mm-hmm.
pretty much the exact same process it takes to create printing plates.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Kodak has now done is made a transition to becoming a real leader in the world of print.
Mm-hmm.
And they supply printing plates to so many people around the world. And then now they also are producing their own printing machines. Specifically, they're creating really, really high quality digital machines.
Sure.
Called the Next Press is their big one. I'm definitely not here to sell anybody on it, but you know, so they've created that. So what Kodak wanted to do, and Kodak has an agency they work with up in Rochester, New York,
mm-hmm.
Truth Collective, bunch of really, really cool people up there in Rochester. They all had this idea of creating this online blog series, essentially what it is going around the world and interviewing and meeting with all the people that are using Kodak's products in an interesting way
mm-hmm.
and telling their story. So they wanted someone that was a designer to be the host.
Sure.
And they wanted someone that could speak to that world a little bit is what uh-huh. they were. And I have no idea how I got my hat thrown in the ring. I know that they narrowed it down. They reached out and asked if I would ever do that. I think someone saw some videos online or something of me and said, would that ever be anything? You know, and I was like, I've never acted. I don't, that's not like my world at all. And they're like, well, no, it would be real chill. Like, you know, it's like more like improvising and talking to people. And just, I was like, oh, well, yeah, I could probably swing that, you know? And then one day they called and they're like, well, I think we're going to do this and you're our guy. Are you free in 2 weeks? And I was like, yeah, I might be able to. What are your thoughts? Where the first one at? First one's in Germany. We hit the road and we're off. And I was like, holy shit, we're going to Germany. And so, yeah, the first episode we did Frankfurt and then drove from Frankfurt all the way up to Hamburg and
uh-huh.
kind of stayed all these places in between. Germany's actually an incredibly sustainable country. So there's a bunch of people there in Germany. They're doing really, really interesting things in the world of print that are crazy sustainable for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Did that. And then we've now just continued to do episode after episode. And it's been really well received and it's helped Kodak. And I think we're going to continue to do more and more.
Oh, cool. So, because I know they've put, I think, 4 out.
Yeah, I think we just released our 4th. I actually had a phone call today about the next possible one that we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's been really, really fun. And that's the problem is they duped me. I get on set for the first time. I'm used to being on the other side of the camera. So that's
sure.
a challenge too, is like trying not to art direct what we're doing. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Like that's not my role. And that's a hard pill to swallow sometimes on their shoots. But like, you know, we get on the airplane for the first time and they hand me this big binder and they're like, you know, turn to the tab that says, you know, editorial or whatever. And they're like, all right, here's your lines for the first shot. Start memorizing those. Camera and lights are up in about 15 minutes. We're going to be rocking and rolling. And I was like, holy shit, hold up.
15 yes, minutes? What?
Yeah, yeah. I was like, yeah, there's no time. And you told me I was just like improvising, shooting the shit, you know? And no, there were things I had to try to remember and memorize. And I'm like, oh, crap, here we go. So, but it's been crazy fun, like super fun.
How the hell do you memorize something? I can't do that. That is not a skill set I have.
It is. And I hope one day they put out a press on blooper reel. Because it is me just fucking tripping over, like, because sometimes it's like, and by their lines, normally they're very open to be like improvising that line a little bit.
Sure.
But a lot of times there's very strategic words that need to be said that might be specific to a product or specific to, you know, whatever. So I totally get that. But those are the ones that trip me up. Just like you said, where I'm like, I know where you're going with this, but I can't remember this extra Johnson plate rod, whatever, you know, whatever that is, you know? And I'm like, this just isn't natural for me to say. I'm going to trip over this every time. So that's been one of the biggest challenges.
When people moved away from the Cytex rip system to the...
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, oh, gosh. Like, I'm just casually talking about the rip system, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, not going to happen, man. Yeah.
I worked... I mean, my first job out of college, I worked pre-press, and I still don't fully understand what a rip system is. Like, I know what it does, but I couldn't explain it to someone who's not a designer.
No. And I've been in so many different print facilities now, and I'd like to tell you I know a little more than the average designer about the print press, but I'm like, I don't think I do at all. I'm trying my hardest to grasp it. But I'm just like, you're going to hit my Pantone colors, right? Right?
Yeah. We're good? Yeah.
Okay, that's all I care about. Okay, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, excuse me. So, with all of these, you know, kind of balls in the air that you're juggling of teaching, you're running Carpenter Collective, you're doing, you know, stuff for Kodak and all your other clients as well. How are you balancing all this out? I mean, obviously you have your wife to rely on, and you've got, you know, the part-time people and your interns that can help, but that's scheduling all that stuff out and finding time to do it. And like we were talking on air, you're going on vacation in a couple weeks, you know. So where are you, you know, finding time for yourself?
I don't. You think I have time for myself. But no, I don't have any time for myself. No, I don't know. We try to, like everybody, we're all very busy and we're all trying to plan and schedule. I know Jessica and I try very hard to plan our weeks out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot of design firms out there, mm-hmm. we have a Monday morning job meeting every Monday, and we go through every job that is currently in under our roof, and we go over every potential job that either we've already written a proposal for, or we are currently writing a proposal for that could be coming down the kind of down the hopper, if you will, you know. So every Monday we go through, and then we have our calendars. All of us share calendars, so we just go through and just start planning everything every week and moving blocks and moving times, you know, to do that. And you know, sometimes you just have to kind of move a lot of things and be very flexible on when you can actually design something and when you can't. But I do not know the answer for how to have a more successful work life. I am the worst person to ask that. I'm the last person in our office at 8 o'clock, and I'm still here, right? Mm-hmm. You know? So it's like, I'm really bad about that. Our new office is actually helping us get a little bit of a work life balance. Prior to our office, We loved our old space. We built a modern live workspace almost 4 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom floor was like a little bit separate from our house. So it was like walkout space that our employees and our clients could actually walk into separately from like our living quarters.
Sure.
And we loved it. We absolutely loved it. And this space became available, and we just couldn't pass on it because it was too ideal. But we have noticed now, having our office downtown here in Kansas City away from our home, it is starting to help our live work balance quite a bit.
Well, yeah, because you have to leave the office at that point.
You have to. Even though I bring my laptop home with me every night and plug in for a little while and bang out a little bit more late at night, like you do, I'm sure, in your laundry room, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the physical separation is helping our Jessica and I, especially as a married couple that works together.
Sure.
It was so easy just to like keep working all the time, you know, like mm-hmm. just, you know, it's like, oh, well, let's just have Chipotle delivered, and we'll eat at our desk for dinner too, and then just keep banging all this stuff out, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like not a healthy way to live. And so we've really tried to create that separation a little better and find some downtime for ourselves in the evening and try to share some time that is not design related, which is hard for my wife and I to do because we both love design and we do it together and we're managing all this. I'm worse than she is. She is so good at saying, "Tad, you need to shut up about whatever design thing I want to talk about. Shut up and watch some trashy ass TV with me and just like veg out for a couple hours," you know? And I need that in my life. Like me personally, I can recognize that that is something I need because I would be the type of person that would just work until I fell asleep on my keyboard. And that is just not a proponent for good work at all.
No. Well, and that leads to burnout and stuff like that too.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm always curious about that because it's so, like I've mentioned to you and like I mentioned off air, my wife's a designer as well. And I mean, we actually met working together at my first job out of college.
But ooh, office romance.
We didn't start dating until after I left there. But yeah, office crush, more like it. But, you know, it hasn't been until really the past few months when I kind of started, because I didn't freelance for a while. I mean, I would take on a, you know, thing here or there, but I've kind of made a, probably in the past 6 months, made an effort to start freelancing more and like trying to find that stuff. And I know since I have a full-time job, I've got to rely on her for help and stuff like that as well. So it hasn't been until then that we really started working together.
Yeah.
So it's trying to find that balance. And, you know, I mean, thankfully we've got kids, so that breaks up, you know, talking about design as, you know, the
totally
conversations now revolve around what did the kids watch on TV today?
I'm sure.
Right? I know more about Minecraft than I ever want to. God. Or yeah.
So is it the two twin boys?
That's
awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Yeah. And like, God, we're going to get way too deep here, but like, that's like, I'm getting long in the tooth. And my wife and I don't have children, and we've been talking about that. Like, we're like, holy shit, are we going to have kids? Like, it's like we have to make that decision now, you know. So like now we're trying to. The new office space has been very helpful for that. Where we're now, okay, we're going to start removing our office out of our home. We're going to remove that out, so we can at least now start to have that dialogue of, are we going to have kids or not? Like, what are we, you know, is this going to be something we do or not? But just regardless, getting a little bit of separation, I think, has been very healthy for us, for sure.
Sure. I understand that. I think I've got a couple years on you. So you still have a few years. My brother didn't have kids till, how old is he now? He turns 40, is it? So until 2 years ago. So 38.
Perfect. So, perfect.
Which I'm guessing you're about that age.
God damn it, man. I'm way younger than that, man. No. I just turned 36.
Oh, okay. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, technically you are younger than that. So. Hey, I'm 42. So I waited till I was 34 to have kids. So.
How do I hang up this stupid podcast? No, I'm just kidding.
That's it. Conversation's over. So yeah, I will say that is the, I mean, there's lots of nice things about having a family. And,
yeah.
But being able to have something that is more important to focus on than work really helps separate things and gives us something to not just talk about design. Because we would. And
yeah,
before we had kids, we would both come home and, you know, we'd talk about our days. And then we'd go into talking about all of the design stuff that we had to work on. Yeah. It wasn't just like, you know, so-and-so was an asshole at work today and he sent me 3 job tickets and they're all fucked up. It was,
yeah.
No, it was, and then I had to work on this and they, you know.
I had to tweak this. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think that's, yeah, because I love design. I love design probably more than I should. Like, I just love the act of creating things, like just waking up and making things. And it makes me happy to make things. But I think it would, like, to have a kid, I think it would be nice to be able to say, you know what, you have a shared focus on something else, which I think is really healthy. I'm not going to lie, I'm scared to death of the possibility of having a child. which I think is normal. Jason, tell me it's normal.
It's normal. Right? It's completely normal.
Yeah, and we have it. Who knows if we will? Who knows if we
will? I've had mine for 8 years. I'm still scared to death about the possibility of having children.
Good to hear. So that fear doesn't go away.
No. Now I'm just scared to death for other reasons.
Maybe it's good. Maybe it's good that I have a fear. Maybe it's the people that aren't scared at all are the ones that we should be worried about, maybe. I don't
know.
Those
are also the ones that end up with 16 kids and live in a trailer park and yeah
I have some relatives like that. It's a scary thing, but it's part of life, and it's an exciting thing. We'll see what happens for us, but man, twins is a good way to go. Wham bam, you're done, right? There's one, two, or something.
Yeah, I mean, we wanted two kids, we weren't expecting them at the same time, but but it did happen. So
I hear that's a possibility.
Yes. Well, and the older that you get, before you hang up on me.
Damn it, Jason, you're scaring me to death. I can't take this. I got the sweat, like, freaking dripping over here talking about this. No.
Well, see, look at the plus side. You have a built-in library of books that you can give to your kids, too.
This is true. I have a freakishly large picture book and children's book library already, for sure. So I always get the question when I go on speaking engagements or – you know, just wherever. And they're like, oh, so tell me about your kids. How many kids do you have? You know? And I'm like, I ain't got any kids, you know? And they're like, what? Oh my God, what? And I'm like,
you're either going to get the why not or the, well, then why do you make children's books?
Well, and that's what the next question is, like, well, why in the world do you make children's books if you don't have kids? Like, I'm like a leper. Like, there's something weird or something wrong with me.
He has a panel van, doesn't he?
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah, come out to my white van and I'll show you. Yeah. It's always funny to get that conversation. And then I have to go into, like, kind of a little backstory, you know, on like, well, my father was an illustrator and he wrote an illustrated book and I write an illustrator and I love that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a whole thing. Marie Sendak never had children. What do you guys think about that? Yeah. So.
Gotcha. Well, we're getting kind of close to our time then. And I don't want to keep you forever. So you can actually not stay there till like 8:30. and I don't shove my foot in my mouth anymore about people's age.
You want to call me fat or ugly or anything else, man?
No, you look remarkably better shape than me and more handsome than me. So
no, not at all.
I'll just keep buttering you up there. So, you know, is there anything exciting that you've got coming up that you can talk about?
Oh, man, what do we got coming up? Project wise, we got some real fun projects we're working on that I'm super stoked on. It's not new anymore, but hopefully when our new website launches, we'll be able to share it. That huge project that I was talking about earlier in the podcast, Boulevard Brewing Company, which is a brewing company here in Kansas City, which is my favorite beer. I've loved them forever. They came to Jessica and I, and they just acquired a new building. And they asked us to design their new tours and rec space.
Oh, awesome.
And essentially what that was is they wanted a museum devoted to the story of Boulevard Beer. And so we had to create a way to create all these little exhibitions and tell this story and create this narrative in more of an exhibition aspect so that created engagement and people would not be afraid to touch things and move things and interact with all the aspects of it. They also didn't want it to be overly tech based.
Sure.
As a Midwestern brewery, they're like, that just does not feel like us to have just a bunch of flat screens everywhere or really, really crazy tech experience. So
sure.
It's a really cool experience to figure out how can we create engagement on more of a physical standpoint through things that spun and moved and that you jumped on and moved off of. It was amazing. So that was a cool project. Then we also branded their beer hall, which is on the second floor, which is cool. At the moment, we're rebranding a 25-year-old coffee roasting company.
Oh, wow.
Which is a super fun project. They make they roast amazing, amazing coffee. And they just needed some help with their brand identity and then us creating a new system for all of their packaging. Mm-hmm. And now they're starting to grow and open new cafes everywhere. So now we're going to start applying the new brand identity to all their new retail locations.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
We're getting ready to open their first new retail location here in 2 weeks. So mm-hmm. we're working on a all the signage and the wayfinding, some interior murals. We've designed some furniture for them. And then obviously the traditional, you know, we're doing packaging and all of that for all their bags and their label, you know, creating a new label system and stuff. So super stoked on that, on those two particular projects, for sure. And then, I'm excited. Adobe Max is coming up in October. That's super fun. I'm thankful that Adobe asked me to come speak. I'll be there in mid-October. That's always fun, and they always have a great lineup of friends that are always speaking. So that should be fun as well.
Cool. So I'm assuming with the food and drink things that you worked into your contract that you also get a lifetime supply of beer and coffee.
Yeah, you would think that would be the case. We always joke around with the coffee roasters. We have not received a single bean of coffee from them. And we've been working on this since about January.
Okay, see, now...
A single bean. Now, why that is and why they continually to tell us that is, and to their point, they roast everything fresh to order. Like, you know, they know how many orders they have every day and how many beans they need for each one of their cafes. Mm-hmm. They roast and ship them to those locations and to those places. So when we come to their office, there's no coffee there at all. We're like, hell, so the only coffee I've ever drank of theirs is when we've gone there to actually research kind of the experience a little bit and stuff like that. And Boulevard, I will say, Boulevard is incredibly generous to us. I wouldn't say we get a lifetime supply, but they are very kind. And I loved any time we would have meetings with them. We would always try to – here's a little, a little trick if all of anybody out there that works with a beer company. We would always schedule our meetings with Boulevard towards the end of the day.
Sure.
Room was lined with taps, and if we did it at the end of the day, all of our clients would typically have a beer or two during our meeting, and man, approvals were so much faster on those late afternoon meetings, man. You know, things were really ticking, so that was super helpful, and they were awesome. But yeah, I should have a lifetime supply of all those things, which they probably would not want from me. Yeah.
I mean, they could throw in a couple extra, you know, scoops of beans and just send one bag your way. It's, you know.
Yeah, every other week, mail us a bag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, if it's that hard, you can always go just pick it up and they can just hand it to you over the counter.
It's not a big deal. Yeah, seriously, I don't mind that. Yeah. I'm easy. Yeah.
Get your attorney on that. Work that into the next contract.
I will make note of that. Yeah.
Cool. Well, Tad, where can people find you online?
Of course, you can. At least our website is carpentercollective.com.
Because that asshole won't give up Carpenter Creative.
Exactly, that son of a bee stink. So yeah, carpentercollective.com, which is extremely out of date and will be new in the next month or so, sure, with a ton of new work. Or then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Tad Carpenter. Easy enough. And then our studio handle is @Carpenter Collective on both Twitter and Instagram as well. So, come say hello to me.
Awesome. Tad, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me tonight.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, man. I hope one day I get to come back to Creative South, and I hope one day I see you there and, we can embrace and, have a great time.
Yeah, definitely. And then go out and hug some necks.
There you go. Yeah, I will do so.
All right. Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Jay.
You can find out more about Tad on Twitter @TadCarpenter. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook @CreativeSOPod. And follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @CreativeSouthGA or @CreativeSouth.com. And I'm @JFrostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jackprints.com and get 20% off orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CREATESOUTH. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.